Simon, are you there?
I'm here, Eve. How are you?
I am good. I am good. Why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself?
So, I'm Simon Neild. I'm from Source FM, which is the community radio station serving Falmouth, Penryn, and the surrounding areas. And we're right on the coast of Cornwall. And Cornwall's very funny shape. It gets narrower the further west it gets towards you. So we're like a little bit of a kind of odd peninsula. If you look at UK, we are the toe of the UK. So we're kind of almost the nearest point of the UK to where you are, but there's a big piece of pond between us.
That's right. Where you are the toe of the UK, we are the arm of New England, I would say. I'm Eve Zukoff, and I'm talking to you from CAI. We're the public radio station serving Cape Cod, Martha's Vineyard, Nantucket, these two islands, and the south coast of Massachusetts. So we are also an oddly shaped landmass in New England, and the arm of the Cape, where we're talking to you from, juts out toward Europe. It's an area that's just all coastline, with 15 different towns on this one little arm that each have their own little culture.
So great to hook up all the way across the Atlantic.
I know. Can you imagine 50 years ago having done anything like this? We're looking at each other. We're talking over Zoom right now, and we're connecting from across an ocean.
So what's the why are we doing these shows, Eve?
Good question. I mean, I think that the idea here, and what we hope listeners find this is a conversation from the UK town of Falmouth to the US town of Falmouth. So we're talking from Cornwall to Cape Cod. And really, the hope is to share some interesting conversations between people on both sides of the ocean. And that's what we'll really hit in this next hour together.
Absolutely. And so the point of this show is we thought we would bring like-minded people from each side of the Atlantic together in conversation. And rather than sort of interview them or anything, we just thought we'd put them in front of each other, give them a microphone, and let them have a chat and see how they got on.
That's right. In this first episode of this really experimental thing that we're trying here, we're going to bring together two potters, two artists, to kind of share what they know about their craft.
And then also, we've got a couple of young people who are talking about the climate emergency, which is very relevant in people's lives at the moment.
But we have a first conversation. Let's start by introducing Steve Bernier and Chris Henderson. So for this conversation, we wanted to acknowledge the pandemic, but in a fresh way. So we started thinking about businesses that have tried to stay open through all of this turmoil, and we struck on two independent grocers. They serve their communities, they struggle to stay open. So here's Steve Bernier, who owns Kronig's Market on Martha's Vineyard, and Chris Henderson, who works at Myler Stores in Myler Village.
Well, I'm Chris, and I'm the manager of the shop. So it's very much a community shop. We call it a grocery deli. We sell a wide variety of goods. People are amazed by how much we've got on our shelves. We say we would like expandable walls, like in Harry Potter, where they can grow, particularly in the summer.
My name is Steve Bernier. I own Kronig's Market, and I'm on the island of Martha's Vineyard in the state of Massachusetts. Sounds very similar. I'm curious, Chris, how big a footprint do you work out of? How many square feet?
We're small. I mean, our shop is, we've got like four small aisles and then a sort of like a wine and soft drinks area. But if you can imagine a small house, because actually that's what this was. It originally was a house. It might be two houses now put together, but it's not a big area, and it's only the downstairs area that we actually have. So it is quite a small enterprise.
Okay, so the grocery store I own here, this footprint here is about 21,000 square feet. About 18,000 of that is sales floor, and we probably carry between 20 and 24,000 items.
Whoa. I think you sound a little bit bigger than we.
We're very independent, freewheeling. I'm a committee of one. It makes it a lot of fun. But it's a beautiful environment to do retail foods in. But I'm just curious, March 13th, 2020, when this pandemic hit, how you managed.
Well, when it started, we were very worried about vulnerable people. We have a lot of elderly people in our village, and we were worried about those people not being able to get their food because they were told to not go outside for 13 weeks. They had to stay in and sort of like self-isolate. We were allowed to go out once for a walk. And of course, we then were inundated with phone calls of elderly people saying, how are we going to get food? And that's what we had to start literally straight from scratch, was to work out how we were going to make sure that these people that perhaps didn't have family around them, didn't use the internet for shopping, that we could actually supply them with food. So I don't know how, Steve, how you found it right at the beginning.
Have you ever been to hell?
Yes, I think we were there as well.
So it was just in a matter of 48 hours, we went from what we would call normal into this chaotic state. We just hearing about COVID and didn't understand. So that first month was beyond scary because it was all moving so fast. People went into panic mode, hoarding, doing all kinds of weird behavior things, and everybody functioning in fear. I've never experienced anything like that in my life, and I've been doing retail foods for 57 years.
Did you have many people, volunteers from around your area coming to help?
They wanted to, but at first there was the fear of, I can't be near anybody. So the first wave of that, no volunteers. Then we had a few people come forward wanting to volunteer, but we saw quickly, so it isn't the old-fashioned grocery store where you can just come in and put stuff on the shelf. Getting the product from A to B, elevators, trailers, and working the whole system become very cumbersome and very difficult, and there were no easy answers. So even when people wanted to help, it didn't help.
We were very lucky within the village. We had a what we called then our mile of volunteers, and we had people, we had actually two sets of volunteers. We had volunteers of people that took items around, collected orders and then delivered them. And then we actually had some people as well that were willing to work in the shop. But I mean, I can remember the one thing we couldn't get was flour. Everybody was making sourdough and flour was very difficult to get hold of.
Yeah. And there's a whole list of items. But back in those first days, I don't know about you, Chris, we didn't have any masks. We didn't have any shields for the cashiers to be behind. We had to improvise and do that on the fly. And then the hardware store across the street, oh, they're out of plexiglass. Now where do we go to go get it? And we're living on an island. So the availability of things became very complicated and very slow, which put everybody at more risk.
Yes. I mean, I can remember we had masks. There were people around, all the people who were self-isolated also wanted to help, and they were making cotton masks, and these were then being passed into the hall. So we very quickly managed to get masks, not through any suppliers, but through all our, through all our local people. You've still got yours.
And the lady in the produce department made this, and yes. I've worn this through the whole thing, because it's too precious and dear that she stayed home and made about 20 masks to help everybody. And I still have
Lovely.
Those masks from 2 years ago.
That's wonderful. We also had, people were still coming to the shop. We still had people coming to the shop, but because we're very small, we couldn't allow people in. We couldn't keep the 2 meter distance. So we actually put a table at the entrance, and then we served people from the table. So people would queue up outside and they would tell us what they wanted and, you know, what colour milk they wanted and all the different items. And so that's how we actually served people, was actually over the counter. The saving grace was in March. I think it was like the day we went into lockdown, we had fantastic sunny weather, which is unheard of for the spring over here. And it lasted for, I think we had like one rainy day in maybe 4 months, which was so lucky. And you should say it was just really what we call thinking on your feet every day. Every day we thought you get through one little hurdle and then there would be another 20 in front of you which you'd have to sort out.
So I'm listening to your story. The beautiful side of COVID was how community functioned together.
Yes.
How we got focused on what was important.
Yeah.
But it was a wartime during peace.
Yes. I mean, our customers, you know, they had to queue outside. Probably each transaction would take 3 or 4 times long because we would have to run around the store and get items. Mm-hmm. We managed to reopen in July for the customers to actually come back in the shop. But some people were still a little bit wary. So we would say, well, no, we'll still serve from the door if you're a little bit worried about coming in. By then we had the masks and we had the screens were put up. So customers did feel more comfortable, but were still quite small. We only then, when we reopened, we would only allow 4 people in the shop at a time. So like in the summer, there was still queues of people outside, just one in and one out.
Yeah, our cutoff point with the Board of Health was 80 people. And I had to have somebody at the door monitoring how many people were coming and going every day for more than 6 months. It was exhausting.
I was going to say, your like Board of Health sounded a lot more involved than our sort of like environment. I suppose our environmental health people, we would actually look online for information and help. We never had anybody came across and visited at all and said, you can do this or can't do that. It was literally mainly all online. We had to try and sort of like figure out or phone another shop and ask them what they were doing.
No, that's an interesting point. Where here, I have a food service license through the Board of Health. So they have some control points on the way I operate my business. So when this pandemic hit, they jumped into overdrive. I think the scariest part for me was at that point there where the Board of Health was telling me they were going to a meeting that evening. And the next day, they were probably going to say to me that they won't allow people to come into the store anymore. And I said to them, well, you can do that, but in about 3-4 days' time, you're going to have thousands of people on this island, which at this time of year was about 16,000-18,000 people. I says, you're going to have people starving. We're not going to be able to feed the people as quickly as they need food. I says, you push that button that way, I can deal with that. I just will have to go very slowly. My people are exhausted. They're already working 60 to 70 hours a week. And that was before they were talking about ramping up and we'd have to do all the shopping for everybody. I says, just the verbal communications, because the average order was over $180, 1,500, 2,000 people a day. That goes out of control in 2-3 days.
Wow.
So each of us had our own peculiar dynamic to deal with. And I think if we talked to 3 more people with shops, each one of them had their own situation to figure out and to make work.
Yes, definitely. And still ongoing. The other thing we did, I can remember now thinking about it, was that ventilation was very important. And because our shop is quite small, we actually had quite a good ventilation. We kept the doors open, even in the winter time as well. So I don't think our front door has been closed for 2 years. in the summer, we have back doors or windows open to keep the ventilation going through the shop. So we end up putting more layers on in the wintertime, you end up wearing more layers. We have been known, I think it was last year, we had hats on because it actually got very cold. I think we had to close the door one day because there was a cat that was trying to come in. But it's amazing, people's resilience. And I think if you sound like you've got a nice team of workers, that you can still laugh. It's very important,
yes.
Wasn't it? We still managed to laugh about it. And chocolate.
Yeah, well, the two go hand in hand. Chris, it's been very nice talking with you and reminiscing and bringing back some of these memories, because some of it, honestly, for me, was scary. some of it, I don't know if I want to go back and revisit all that. It was at a point of time when you could feel yourself, your inner sanctum coming unglued. And you're supposed to lead all these people and you're supposed to serve this community and you're going out of control. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
As of today, we're still dealing with, you wake up each morning, you come to work, and you have to have the spirit inside of you. Whatever comes at you, you know something, every day has been an event. And you just have to be prepared, open-minded, open-hearted to welcome and work with whatever it is you have to deal with today and try to put the puzzle together.
Steve, it has been lovely and wonderful talking to you.
And thank you very much. I very much enjoyed that.
So that was Steve Bernier, who owns Kroning's Market on Martha's Vineyard, and Chris Henderson, who works at Myler Stores in Myler Village. Eve, what did you think of that?
Oh, I loved so much about that. I loved the way they talked about resilience and kind of the gift that is resilience. But I have to, is it terrible if I say my favorite part is listening to Chris's accent?
No, not at all, because I loved Steve's accent, if I have to say.
Well, it's not an accent. You're the one with the accent.
So, do you know what I loved as well? The positivity that came out of people working together from both sides shone through in that conversation.
And this was our proof of concept conversation. This was the first conversation we recorded for this idea that we could bring together the Falmouth of the UK with the Falmouth of the United States. Kind of our thoughts beforehand were, is this going to work? Are these two people with very different lives, very different experiences, are they going to connect? And I think this was this moment of, I think we have something here. Well, we have more conversations coming up, right? What are we looking forward to next?
Well, we've got a couple more conversations to come up. We've got two potters talking to each other. But first, after the break, we're going to have a chat with two young climate activists. One is an activist and one is a young person who's worried about the climate. So, Eve, time for you to go over to your break. And over here in Cornwall, we'll just play a couple of nice tunes. You're listening to CAI in Falmouth, Cape Cod.
And Source FM, Falmouth, UK.
Our collaborative radio project connecting Cornwall to Cape Cod.
This is Falmouth to Falmouth. Falmouth to Falmouth, our collaborative radio project connecting Cornwall to Cape Cod. I'm Eve Zukoff from CAI on Cape Cod.
And I'm Simon Neal from Source FM in Falmouth, Cornwall. And we're reaching out to each other across the Atlantic. And we decided that a good place to be for this next link would be down on our respective beaches. And I'm sitting on Castle Beach, which is so named because straight ahead of me is Falmouth Castle. It's just perched there on top of the hill. How many castles have you guys got?
We have lighthouses. We didn't get any castles here in New England. You kept them all for yourself. But what I do see really is a really stunning lighthouse. And looking out straight across the water, I actually see the island of Martha's Vineyard. And as we speak, there's a ferry slowly kind of lugging itself across the sound. This is called the Vineyard Sound. And it's just a really beautiful place to be. But I'm so glad we both took field trips.
Absolutely.
Well, Simon, you know, if we both stood and faced the right way and we looked out and the world was flat, we would see each other, right? Like we're talking from across an ocean. If we position our bodies the right way, we could be facing each other as we talk.
We could. I'm actually on the wrong coast. I'm facing the opposite direction to you at the moment, but
you have your back to me.
Exactly. And it's lovely hearing the waves in the background there. Eve, do you want to tell us about the website?
Yeah, well, for people to be able to see kind of all of what we're trying to do here, they can go for us, it's capeandislands.org, and you can check out more of the music that we have to share. We've also got something pretty cool. We came up with this idea that people should take a quiz on our website, Name That Coast, right? So we're going to show you a handful of photos of beaches. You decide, are they Cornwall? Are they Cape Cod? See how well you know your own coast. It's way harder than it sounds. Trust me.
It is. It is. I'm failing already on the pictures you've sent me.
It's fitting that we're talking here from the coast, because the next two people we're going to hear from are two young people who have thought a lot about what it's like to grow up on a coastline and what the future of living on a coastline might look like. So this is a climate activist here on Cape Cod, youth climate activist named Trindy Poon, she's 18, and Ellie Baxter, who is a young person who's also worried about the climate over in the UK. So let's listen here to Ellie and Trinity.
Hello, so I'm Ellie, I'm 22, and I was born here in Falmouth, and I've just been to university and graduated.
Hi, I'm Trinity, I'm a senior in high school. I was actually born in Salt Lake City and moved here like 8 years ago to Sandwich, but I'm in Falmouth right now. I am part of a climate change education group with our Massachusetts Audubon Society, and I'm very excited to talk to you today.
So what made you want to get involved with it?
Well, like you, I've kind of like always been aware that it was happening, and I feel like it's just this massive issue, and I feel like students these days are told in their science classes, like, you know, you're inheriting this world, like this is your problem you have to deal with. And so, you know, that's kind of some pressure, like, oh, I've got to actually take an active role in making a world that we can continue to live in. But primarily, I've just always liked being outside. I like nature. And so, you know, in science class, when they kind of teach you, like, this is all going away, that's my main motivation, is kind of just preserving the beautiful space around me.
It's stunning down here in Falmouth as well, and to imagine it underwater is quite terrifying. So yeah, I think there definitely needs to be more education, I feel, in the UK about it, because at school I was taught about renewable energy sources like wind turbines, etc. I don't think I was ever actually given advice on how to make changes. I was just taught the science behind it. So I think that's good that over where you are actually like getting some tips. I don't think I got anything while I was at school.
That's kind of scary. I would imagine as a student kind of learning that, like, oh, the world is not doing great. And then to just kind of leave with that, it's not very empowering, which I think is an important part of activism, is making sure you have some sort of inspiration or empowerment, as it's a dismal thing to, you know, constantly have to fight for. And then there's always, you know, pushback, and it's frustrating to not be able to see the change you're making, I feel like.
Yeah, being inspired and being encouraged to make changes is what is really great. And like you said, you don't need to be an expert, you don't need to know the science, but making little changes in your lifestyle, it may not help on a massive scale, but it's something, and it's a start. Obviously, you're in a coastal town. Is there a lot of beaches around you?
Yes, yeah.
When you're walking on the beaches, do you notice rubbish?
Oh, yes.
Or are people quite clean, really?
Yeah, especially in the summertime, you know, when we get tourists, we get a lot of trash, and it's disappointing too, especially when you see, like, animals interacting with it, and you're like, that shouldn't be there. And unfortunately, I think it's becoming kind of just such a normal sight to see trash on the beach that you don't even notice it.
We get hordes of tourists down here. That's what we're known for down here. It's a very touristy town, especially in the summer. And that is when the rubbish amount does increase, which isn't nice. You don't want to be walking along an area of natural beauty and see that everywhere. It's not pleasant.
It's almost ironic, I guess, that tourists come, obviously, to Falmouth, Cornwall, to experience such a beautiful place, and then they put their trash everywhere. They pollute it. Have you found that among students there's much conversation about climate change or more awareness than non-students?
In terms of my experience as being a student in the UK, no, I don't think I've ever sat with people and had a conversation about it. I think it sounds bad to say it, but everyone's got so much to think about, especially being in a pandemic. Like, it's been hard to get jobs. It's like, it's taken a big toll on people's mental health, this pandemic. And I just feel like people's minds are just preoccupied with other things right now, which sucks, but it's hard. It's hard being young in the world right now with all of this going on. It's very scary.
Yeah, I agree. I think that is a big issue with climate change also, is that it makes you anxious. It makes you kind of look at the world as doomsday, because then on top of it, you get, you know, the crisis in Ukraine, you get the pandemic. Like, it kind of piles on. And I think for a young person, you know, you can't really look at the world as like, oh, well, you know, it is what it is, because it's like, I've got a lot of time here.
Yeah.
You know, has there been any kind of movement or, I don't know, advocacy for also acknowledging your mental health along with climate change and, you know, young people kind of taking care of themselves in the midst of the chaos?
In terms of getting support, I feel like people my age and everyone else, that we've kind of just been left to our own devices. I'm sure there is support somewhere out there for people, but regarding climate change, I don't think there's anything. If someone came to me and was like, oh, I'm really anxious about what's going on in the world and I'm scared about the future of the planet, I would not be able to give them any advice or tell them anywhere to go for some support, if I'm honest. Like,
yeah,
we have kind of been left to our own devices to research it ourselves and take it upon ourselves to give ourselves reassurance, really.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of think the same thing is happening here. While there are, like, I know on social media, people post random things that are like, take time for yourself, like, the world is going to be fine. But I think it's hard to kind of say, I guess, exactly how someone deals with climate anxiety or just even anxiety in general about the world. But unfortunately, I think it causes people to compartmentalize a little bit. Like, climate change is not an issue I have to worry about right now. And I think on one hand, that can be helpful for you as an individual, but also, you know, in the news, it puts it on the back burner. It puts it on the back burner.
It's almost like that attitude of, I'll cross that bridge when I come to it, sort of thing, which is not a great way to think. But there is just so much going on in the world right now. In regards to the future, how do you see the future?
Like, my future? I guess for me, it honestly kind of makes the future more nebulous, more foggy. Like, I'll sometimes think about, like, oh, what do I want to do for a career? You know, think way far in the future of, like, having family, whatever. And then kind of when I realize, like, oh, but I don't know what the world is going to look like. I don't know where we'll be at with climate change. I think it does make things a little more uncertain. You know, you can't really look at your parents and how they saw the future versus how it is now. You know, I feel like there was maybe a little more security kind of just given that there will be beautiful places, there will be clean water, there's going to be clean air. I feel like we don't really have that gift of security of environment, which kind of upends everything you thought you could have in the future. And that's kind of a bleak way to look at it, but I'm not giving up yet. I am hopeful that people don't just throw in the towel and say, well, we're doomed, because I don't really think that we are. I think when we're put in this situation in which we need to do something, there's like definitive action that needs to be taken. And when there's a pressing issue, we figure it out. We've always figured it out one way or another. So I guess I'm kind of seeing it as like there's going to be some sort of moment of reckoning that the world is going to have to change its ways. And I mean, we're facing that right now, slowly but surely.
I'm glad that you answered that so positively. I thought I was going to be hit with, we're all going to die, sort of thing. So it's nice to hear that you have some optimism. Thank you for taking the time out of your day to talk to me. I think it's been great. I've really enjoyed talking to you. I've never spoken to someone over in America before, so it's been really cool.
Thank you. I've really enjoyed talking to you. You've given me some new perspectives on things I hadn't really thought about before. So, yes, and I also have not spoken with someone from England before, so this is very exciting.
That's Trindy Poon of Cape Cod and Ellie Baxter of Cornwall. Simon, what did you like about that conversation? What stood out to you?
Well, I love the fact that you have two young people there. One, I believe, was 17 or 18 and the other was 22. So putting them across the table for each other and